Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give it a like and a subscribe. You'll love all the content Travis Ryer puts on that YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis throughout the fall, covering Alabama football for what I believe is our ninth year, even maybe, Travis,
eight,
with the Talking Tide podcast.
Eight just isn't enough. You know, just
repping with rolling. That cap. I love that cap. I've got the reverse white with.
Yeah, you got the road white.
Yeah,
and I've got the home crimson. You got the road white. You know,
fitting with Alabama coming home right to a game against Mercer,
and had played pretty good on the road in that road crimson or the home crimson on Saturday night. We'll get into that.
Alabama 42-13 winners over the LSU Tigers in Death Valley. Travis, a lot to get to. We'll break down the game from top to bottom, of course. We'll look around the SEC on the back end like we always do, but the hunt for the college football playoff is upon us. Travis, still relevant for Alabama fans, thanks only to the victory over LSU. Two-loss team. Alabama's in a lot of company as a two-loss team, Travis, but they're sitting in good shape right now.
You would think so. You know, you look at the latest college football playoff reveal, and understand, folks, it's still a TV show, first and foremost, okay? We still got some important games to play, but with this gaggle of two-loss teams, especially in the Southeastern Conference, after what happened in addition to Alabama and LSU last Saturday, Chase, there is some early intrigue. It feels like in some ways it's getting late kind of early where this 12-team field is concerned. And I wouldn't have anticipated that as much, but yeah, still some work to be done. We'll see if Alabama can take care of business over these final 3 weeks. If it does, you would think Alabama in good shape with that 12-team field.
Yeah, Alabama, Travis, they're the only team in the top 25 with four wins over current top 25 teams. So from a schedule standpoint, obviously the Vanderbilt loss is one that hurts. But if you're talking about quality wins, Alabama's going to stack up awfully well against anybody who's also got two losses.
You would think so. You know, you get into comparing resumes already, right? And we still have 3 weeks of the regular season left. But yeah, those four top 25 wins would seem to stand out. And it just still feels like there's that Vandy stench that you can't sort of cleanse yourself of, even in a year where Vandy is already bowl qualified early in November. But no, I think Alabama, again, should be in good shape. You wonder about a scenario with an SEC championship game participant that ends up with three losses. How could that impact them? Could it be a disadvantage to advance to Atlanta? How's that going to be viewed by this committee? Because right now what we're seeing is, okay, undefeated up top, one loss team's next, at least in terms of Power Five teams, right?
Right.
And then you get into the two loss teams. It feels like they've just pretty much got it stacked by record at this point.
It does, and I wrote after the LSU game on Saturday night from Baton Rouge that I think if you're Alabama, why would you want to go to the SEC championship game and catch that third loss? I said, look, when they launched the four-team field in 2014, before they even put the first team bracket together, I said then, I'll believe they'll put a two-loss team in this thing when I see it, and I never saw it in 10 years. Yeah. Well, now I'm sitting here in the same position 10 years later saying I'll believe they'll put a three-loss in there when I see it. Now, I don't think it's going to take 10 years for a three-loss team to make the 12-team field. It'll happen. I have no doubt that circumstances will arise where it's going to happen. So it's not quite like the two-loss in the four-team. That said, I'll believe it when I see it in this first bracket.
Yeah, I agree. It creates an interesting dilemma. If you're Alabama, yeah, I mean, you always want to win an SEC championship, but you already got 30 of them damn things, you know? I mean, what do you need another SEC championship for? I say that half tongue in cheek, but
yeah,
big picture wise, what are you playing for? What are you playing for if you're Alabama? We've seen Alabama in years in which it didn't win an SEC championship, like 2017, win the national championship. You know what no one talks about no one talks about really how Alabama didn't win an SEC championship in 2017, but they'll still remind you about that, you know, the throw from Tua to Devontae Smith, right? In overtime to beat Georgia. Everybody remembers that.
No question. And as it relates to this year's CFP, Travis, I think when you look at it, there's downside to playing and winning too, right? Because injuries, right? You're beat up another week.
You lose a bye week. Yeah.
You lose a bye week. And the only upside is seeding if you win. And then, of course, the downside, if you lose and you go in with two L's, whether you're Alabama or anybody else in any other league, is that you got a damn good chance of getting bounced on this thing.
You do. And, I agree. It's going to be fascinating to watch play out. And, you know, I look at the rankings right now. If they were today to start the college football playoff, boy, that would be interesting. I thought Miami might fall below Alabama too because of that loss to Georgia Tech. To me, that was kind of like Alabama's loss to Vandy. But again, Miami just a one-loss team, and so there they are at 9 instead of 10. Indiana's fascinating. I think Indiana's run is about to come to an end, I would think, but I don't think Ohio State's that great. That's kind of what I keep going back to when I think about, there's a lot of SEC teams with two losses, but I like just about every one of them in matchups with the Big Ten teams that are ranked ahead of them. Penn State at number 4, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah. Sign me up for that right now. Now, Penn State is a bye team in the first round of this thing. I think if I were Alabama, I might rather play at Happy Valley than Bloomington right now, because what I see from Indiana is a team that can score, right? They can light you up offensively. When I look at Penn State, they're toothless on offense. So look, that's down the road. We got plenty of time to get to that, but just thinking about some of the scenarios that you could get into, whether it involves Alabama or not, is going to be kind of crazy when the time gets here.
42-13 win for Alabama in Baton Rouge. Travis, Alabama takes control early, keeps its foot on the gas. Lots of times in big games like this, when you see one team jump out to a big lead, the comeback attempt, a strong, furious comeback is inevitable. Happened with Alabama, Georgia, right? Ran out of that big lead against the Bulldogs. Georgia roars back and even takes a brief lead late in the game on Alabama. It wasn't the case with this one, right? Alabama went to halftime, and I'm thinking, well, you know, they played extremely well, but here comes LSU, because that's what happens in games like this. And LSU didn't come out on fire in the second half like they needed to at all.
They didn't. And what a huge play by Deontay Lawson, right? Picking off that Nussmeier pass at the goal line. And what a play by Deontay Lawson, because he didn't take the cheese. That first crosser came there. He sort of checked that receiver, but then maintained his responsibility right there in sort of that secondary window. And Nussmeier totally anticipated Deontay taking the cheese. And so he felt like he had a clean lane to work with right there. But boy, what a huge play by Deontay Lawson. Really just a complete performance, man, all the way around. We wondered exactly which Jalen Milroe we would get. I know we talked about this last week on the show, what our sort of confidence or trust level was in this Alabama team. Well, if we knew we were going to see that Jalen Milroe, I think it would have been much higher for both of us.
Yeah, no question about it. Milroe had a phenomenal game, 185 on the ground on 12 totes, a lot of it designed, 4 rushing touchdowns, breaks one for 72 to begin the fourth quarter that really put – I think the game was really over at that point already, but that was quite an exclamation point, Travis, with the long one that he broke down the sideline just imposing their will. And I thought the rain factored in this game. I realize it didn't rain in the second half, really. But in the first half, what the rain did to me was it exposed the biggest difference there is between Milroe and Nussmeier. And that's one needs a dry ball more than the other.
Yeah, it seemed like that was the case. And you were there, so you had a much better feel for what it was actually like. But the deep ball to Ryan Williams in the first half, when it looked like it was torrentially pouring at that point, maybe as hard as it rained the entire game, you were left to wonder if it's drier even just by a little bit. Does that hookup happen? Does Ryan hang on there to that sort of lunging, striding catch down deep inside LSU territory? But, you know, here's the thing, man. Even if you go back to the last year or two of Nick Saban and into this season, too often by the standards we've grown accustomed to, okay, with Alabama football here in the last 17, 18 years, there just hadn't been enough heroes that have shown up in spots like that one Saturday night. And you had multiples, right? You didn't have hero ball. I didn't see from anyone involved. But, man, whether it was the offensive line just moving that LSU defensive front on those quarterback runs, whether it was the running backs doing their job on those runs, Jam Miller, Justice Haynes, Jalen, obviously, defensively, I thought the pass rush, even when Alabama rushed just four, was better. I know it didn't show up maybe statistically as much, but there was a consistent sort of disruptiveness to it. And you know, Jihad Campbell was out of this world. Deontay with the big play. Bray Hubbard continues to thrive there at the safety position. I thought Damani Jackson made one of the biggest plays of the game on the first run by Caden Durham, where he runs him down at the five and it ends up leading to a field goal instead of a touchdown. So just really across the board, more so than we've seen certainly this season, but even into last season and prior to that, so many different guys playing such big roles in a win.
Yeah, team effort for sure. You know, you look at a guy like Jeremy Bernard, who had a frustrating night, Travis, right? He didn't light up the box score. They tried to get him the ball a few times. It just wasn't Jeremy Bernard's night, but he blocked all night. You know, you watch the tape and, you know, some guys, if they've gotten four targets and, you know, no catch or one catch for minus two, they don't like to block so good. But Bernard was getting after it from a blocking standpoint, and like all the receivers have done this year, I think. I think as a group, they've blocked well. But, you know, that stood out a little bit to me just as something that's under the surface, right? You know, you mentioned lots of heroes. How about Wilkin Formby throwing one of the key blocks on Milroe's 72-yarder, blocking down on Whit Weeks and just burying him?
Yeah.
There was a lot of good play from some guys that you necessarily don't see all the time.
No, Geno Vandermark jumped in there too, whether it was, you know, Brailsford's helmet maybe being ripped off while he was pancaking a second level defender for LSU jumping in there. And then also we saw him, you know, once Jaden Roberts had to go out, and injury is a big part of this too. I know we're going to get to, especially where Q Robinson is concerned and what that means to this team moving forward. But, you know, they played through a bunch of that. And so to get through it, other than Q looking to be in pretty good shape, I think Jaden's situation is just going to be kind of in and out. It's been that way all year. He's obviously playing with multiple issues. Credit him for gutting through those things. But maybe a silver lining in that is that you have a guy like Vandermark. Good move to bring him in as a veteran from Michigan State, because it seems to have paid dividends in terms of depth at center and guard.
It has. And you know, offensive line wise, you know, I think this group is playing pretty darn well. Matter of fact, I think I saw they're now, semifinals for the Joe Moore Award. I didn't see that coming. But they've definitely played well. Caden Proctor's improvement at left tackle, not just LSU, but across the whole season. That's been a big spark for this team.
It has. And, you know, they seem to have loved it Saturday night when it was pretty evident that, look, you know, we're going to run the football. It may not be traditional in some ways as far as the backs, but they were running basically duo and zone like they would run for backs. They were just using the quarterback and had an extra blocker. I mean, there was times they were in 13 personnel with three tight ends out there, and it wasn't goal line or short yardage, and they were running super counter, pulling a guard, pulling the H, pulling the tight end. And yeah, they were going retro with some of those runs. Now they were quarterback runs, but they were kind of almost single wing type of stuff from Alabama, but it was fun to watch. And I'm sure it wasn't all that fun to catch if you were out, LSU defenders, because they spent most of the night catching.
Simple stuff. I mean, I can't remember if it was the 19-yard touchdown Milroe had or the 10-yard or one of the two in the middle. He took it around the left side with Justice Haynes as his lead blocker, and Alabama ran that exact same play like two plays earlier and just gashed LSU. They just turned around instead of waiting until the fourth quarter, like, oh, we should write that down, right? And remember that. They're like, nah, let's hit this. Go ahead and hit this thing again on them, you know?
Yeah, the C gap, it seemed like off the left side, there was a trench at the end of the night where they had kind of worked through there. And you talked about, you know, Jalen sort of capping run. That felt a little bit like Sean Alexander in 96 down there when he housed one, went cross country there against the Tigers. And I know you were there. I know you had a fun X post about the storming, I guess, of the exits by the LSU fans Saturday night, because they weren't on the field after this one.
No, Travis, they bailed. Somebody commented on that and called it Deserted Valley. So pretty, yeah. There's some awful captioning going on for that photo. Better than mine, certainly. You know,
by the end of the third quarter, it kind of looked like the 2020 game when there was COVID. You know, and they could only put 20,000 in there the whole
one
game.
One guy said it looked like a Harris campaign after party. Ooh, you know, just awful. You know, but and for the record, that photo was taken with exactly 2 minutes left during the 2 minute. Stoppage, and I don't believe the rain had really restarted. The rain restarted just a little bit toward the right at the end, but I don't think that had started yet. And it wasn't even all that heavy. It certainly wasn't nearly as heavy as it was in the first half.
Yeah, Saturday night in Death Valley is a lot of fun until your team's getting blown out, and you still got to make that 3-hour drive back to Slidell or wherever you got to go, or Northern Louisiana or something like that.
Defensively for Alabama, Travis, you mentioned Jihad Campbell, really all over the field. 12 tackles, 3 TFLs, sack and a half, a forced fumble, one of his best career games. He is ascending in the eyes of NFL scouts. I can tell you that for sure. I'm not going to be totally shocked if he's the first Alabama player off the board, which would surprise some people now. Might not surprise people by the time draft day rolls around. We'll see, but he is playing at a very high level for right now. Lawson is too, for sure. And, you know, Justin Jefferson, I think still he gets in there and flashes. I see Alabama usually playing real good football on defense when they've got all three of those guys in the game at the same time, which they'll do here and there.
And that gives them that opportunity to get their best 11, or maybe what they consider to be their best 11, on the field together. Because of Jihad's flexibility, which probably is going to become even more important now with Q out for the remainder of the season. So, you know, that could be a big luxury that they have, because they are so comfortable with Jefferson. You know, and I was starting to wonder going into Saturday, you know, Alabama's got this historic run of first round picks on an annual basis, right? Mm-hmm. The streak. I'm starting to wonder, I guess Tyler Booker, right? Most people see him as that guy, but you always wonder a little bit about interior offensive linemen with a guard, not a tackle, a guard. But man, I would think Tyler again is a first round guy, but you're right. Jihad Campbell, in terms of the game being built perfectly for him, probably more so in the NFL than it is in college, because in college you still have more commitment to a run game. You have quarterbacks as pseudo running backs in college that you have to account for between the tackles. NFL, you got the Lamar Jacksons, you got guys like that. But even in those cases, you like a guy like Campbell because he's got a chance in space against those kind of guys. And that's before you start dropping him into coverage. That's before you start moving him up, bringing him in the pass rush. Very much so a money-making night for Jihad Campbell in Baton Rouge.
You mentioned the Q Robinson injury, Travis, out for the season, upper body injury of some kind, came out in a sling out of that medical tent, as a matter of fact, back to the Alabama sideline. Tough break for Q Robinson, really nice kid, one of the most media friendly players on the team. I can tell you that. Sometimes he even pops into the media room when everybody's writing and I'm not even an interview scenario, and just he'll pop in and say, "What's up, fellas?" That kind of thing. Hated to see that for him. Yeah. For Alabama, though, defensively, Travis, obviously, Quay Rousseau, now his snap's going to be going way up. Yanze Pierre behind him. Your thoughts on the depth situation there?
Well, this is where Keanu Coote could have been big for you, too, but obviously not available at this point. And that's disappointing because he's a veteran guy. You know, you figure at this point, maybe that's the guy you could lean on more so than a couple of second year guys. But look, Quay Rousseau has started games this season. Quay Rousseau has been heavily in the rotation. He was hurt earlier in the year, so he's had a chance to kind of get back to 100%. He's going to be big. I think Yanze Pierre can also do that. And again, the flexibility, the versatility of Jihad Campbell probably ramps up for you a little bit too.
No doubt. In the secondary for Alabama, Travis, we're seeing a little bit of Deshaun Jones at the Husky. Interesting development there, playing some nickelback from kid transferring from Wake Forest. I asked him today, as a matter of fact, if he saw any action at nickel at Wake. He said, nope. So a new thing, but it sounds like something he's excited for to get over there. Of course, we've seen the Mincy kid over to safety. So they're playing a lot of guys, and now they're trying a couple guys out at different spots.
Yeah, and with Keon Sab still out, boy, Bray Hubbard stepping his game forward. Another takeaway for Bray at the safety position. Had a big hit in the game as well on an incompletion. Plays fast and seems to be able to process quickly. And you don't see him out of position much, if at all. So it's still not ideal with Keon Sab out. Obviously, you'd love to have him because you never can have enough. I know I've had some viewers on some of the programs here on the channel say, well, you know, give me Hubbard over Sab. My point is you need all of them, right? Mm-hmm. Because just like you've lost Sab for an extended period, who knows how long, you know, you could lose another one. You could lose, you don't want to see it, but one of these other top three or four safeties, and then you're in that same situation. So to really feel good about two, you almost need to have three available that you really like and feel like you can go with. Same thing at corner. And I thought, you know, Xavien Brown, Damani, I think LSU's longest completion in the game was 28 yards. And Josh Williams, the running back, led LSU in receptions. Man, going into the game with those receivers, Aaron Anderson, you know, Kyron Lacy, you would have felt pretty good about that, I think, if that's what you'd have been told going into it.
Yeah, Alabama pitched a shutout on Lacy for a while. I don't think he had a catch at the half. A
lot of fantasy football yards and catches.
That's right. That's right. Phenomenal job on him because he's their guy, right? Yeah. I mean, he was averaging, I think, pretty close to 16 yards a catch, led him in touchdown catches. He was and that, you know, they hit Mason Taylor in the seam once or twice. That hurt Alabama too. Yeah. I would imagine Alabama was probably in a cover three when that happened. Cause when you get beat in the seam like that, a lot of times that's what's happening. But for the most part, phenomenal game for the Alabama defense. You mentioned the pass rush looking pretty consistent. Certainly no stars up there. It's pass rush by committee on this team, which is something that you didn't often really see with Nick Saban. If Nick Saban ever had a pass rush by committee, it was a committee of stars, right?
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean they can't get the job done as a group.
Yeah, I think 2012 or so, Alabama was a little bit that way, kind of Adrian Hubbard era pass rush. But you're right. You did have guys at other positions that you could count on to provide pressure. It didn't have to be the prototype edge guy that so many people equate to pass rush. So it'll be interesting to see if they can, you know, continue to get guys like James Smith playing to a higher level, Quay, you know, LT Overton can be that kind of guy in the pass rush too. Tim Smith, I thought, had a good football game at LSU. So, you know, you've got some guys, you got a nice mix, I think, of experience and potential. We're seeing some younger guys too, as games move on. Jordan Renaud, we see in some situations. So Freddie Roach, he's not leaving any rocks unturned at this point.
No, he's not. And speaking of Overton, he's another guy who's helping himself out a lot when it comes to pro stock. So. As well. So, that's one of the best, games Alabama's defense has played all season. No question about it. The SEC, Travis, scores around the league. We'll touch on those. Be sure, by the way, to subscribe and like to Ryer on YouTube. Lots of great content there. Not just Alabama football, but a lot of Alabama football. Some SEC at large content as well. Just great stuff at Ryer on YouTube. Give it a like, give it a subscribe. Travis, Ole Miss 28, Georgia 10. That's the one we should probably lean on the most as we look at a couple of these scores. Big game. Lane Kiffin finally kind of gets over the hump in one of these types of games, right? He had built a well-deserved reputation for not getting it done in some of these huge chances over the years, but gets this one done for sure. Jackson Dart outplays Carson Beck. Carson Beck appears to be a bit of a mess right now. Hadn't played well in a while, and Ole Miss and Nick Saban sounded this alarm at the very beginning of the season. They're for real on the line of scrimmage. Whereas in the past they often have not been. But that was pretty evident in this game as well.
It was the old man got out of the game before Lane could get him, right? Boy, you could tell Lane, it pained him that he never got Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. But he did get Michael Corleone. He didn't get the Don.
That's right.
But he got Mike. He got Mikey. It was very impressive, man, because like you outlined there, it wasn't fluky. You know, it wasn't some type of shootout or anything like that. It was Ole Miss pretty much playing Georgia football and beating Georgia by 3 scores. That was the most stunning thing about it, and also how the game started. I mean, it was the absolute worst start that Ole Miss could have because Dart is injured. Dart throws a pick. That sets up a short field for Georgia. Georgia thrives on that, especially right now with the quarterback situation being what it is. So Georgia goes up 7-0. You don't know what Dart situation is going to be because he's in the locker room or in the training room. But, boy, Austin Simmons steps into the game at quarterback for Ole Miss and takes the Rebels down the field to tie the game. Dart comes back in, and then from that point forward, it was just really never in doubt. And absolutely, the acquisitions, I guess we'll call them even in college football now, right? They're like the NFL acquisitions. I mean, Walter Nolan, Chris Paul Jr. at linebacker, Trey Amos, as we know, from Alabama – in the secondary to go along with guys like JJ Pegues. And I just mentioned a couple of the transfers. They're loaded with them. Lane has done a great job of making that all work within the team dynamic. That's not very easy. Just ask Mike Norvell about that this year compared to last year. But that was the surprising thing to me, was that Ole Miss just basically stuffed Georgia into a locker.
Ole Miss fans stormed with 16 seconds left in the game for Pete's sake, Travis.
for Pete Golding's sake. Yeah. And then the goalposts made their way to the square again, it looked like, too. So
extra 100K going to Georgia for that early one, you know.
Yeah. That's going to hurt. That's going to hurt that NIL, you know.
Yeah. Coming out of that game, though, Travis, now you turn around. Look, Georgia's got a tougher road to make the playoff now than Ole Miss does. Ole Miss doesn't have much left. They got a bye week, and then they got a reeling Florida team and a bad Mississippi State team, and they're done. So
those Florida fans are dreading that, too. Or maybe, who knows, but there's so many Florida fans that wanted Lane in Gainesville next year, and then Strickland comes out with that tweet or whatever that was last week. Who knows, though, what that even means.
Right.
But now Florida fans have to have Lane right there in front of them, you know. But we'll see if DJ Lagway plays in that game. Lagway plays, that could still be interesting because Ole Miss can still be a little helter-skelterish. Now, the last time Ole Miss went on the road, they absolutely thundered Arkansas. So that's the part you would dread if you're a Florida fan, is if Lane comes in and puts a 60 burger on you, and then you still don't end up with him. You can take the 60 burger if somehow you get Lane.
Right.
But, boy, it won't taste so good if you don't get him.
Georgia, though, Travis, they turn around and got Tennessee. They got them at home. They got them in Athens. But that's talk about a quick dive. If Georgia goes from where they were a week ago to back-to-back losses to Ole Miss and Tennessee, and now you're in the ReliaQuest Bowl or wherever you go from there, if you're Georgia, that's a collapse. No other way. Now, of course, they got Tennessee at home. Tennessee's plus 10. I think I like the Vols there.
Nico, though. Nico going to play? Nico's in that concussion protocol.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're not winning with Gaston Moore, I don't think.
It's a lot of points, though.
It's a lot of points in the Tennessee defense, regardless with where this – where Georgia, I can't envision blocking Tennessee in the game. That everybody talks about Carson Beck, and he's a problem right now. I didn't have Georgia fans calling for a quarterback change in week 12 on my bingo card back in August either. But, you know, that's some of the stuff that's going on. If Carson Beck's body language could talk, it would be like Andrew Dice Clay. It's that bad.
Yes.
It's that blue right now. And so, yeah, I hear you, but you got to wonder about the quarterback situation for Tennessee going into this game. I mean, if Nico can't go, I like Tennessee to even still hang in there probably, but to actually win in Athens without Nico. And to me, Nico's a solid quarterback this year. His upside is still very much the thing that entices you about him. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't been great on the road. I mean, he was terrible at Arkansas. So, and I said this on Second Helping here on the channel with Brent Beard a day or so ago. It feels like Tennessee has been at home for like 2 months, right? It's hard to remember the last time Tennessee went on the road. So was that Arkansas? It wasn't good, you know?
Right. South Carolina 28-7 over Vanderbilt. We'll hit on that one real quick too, Travis, before we get out of here. South Carolina playing much better football lately for sure. Shane Beamer's got some excitement going on over in Williams-Brice. I forget who it is. South Carolina still got somebody on their schedule coming up that matters, a two-loss team or a one-loss team.
Clemson. I
think.
I mean, they got there Clemson you go. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But South Carolina looking good. Wheels come off a little bit for the Pavia clan, Travis.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit too, is South Carolina on the road this year in the SEC has been one of the very best teams in the league because they've done something Georgia hasn't done this season. They've won three road games in the SEC. Mm-hmm. They hammered Kentucky. They hammered Oklahoma, and they took care of Vanderbilt. Now, the road schedule hasn't been exactly what Georgia has faced. I get that this season, but it's been very impressive because even in the one road loss for South Carolina this year, that was in Tuscaloosa, and that was very much a game in doubt there later into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Missouri, the team I was thinking of that South Carolina's still got to play. Missouri – Mayor a two-loss team, Travis, but boy, that Missouri team just looks so flat right now. Kind of a hollow.
And your boy Drink still keeps running it after wins too. He had something for Bobby Stoops after the game Saturday night. They should have won the game. Then they should have never won the game, and then they did win the game. But then he had a little, you know, DG Spurrier. He's something else. That's a guy that some people think to keep an eye on with Florida, maybe if it still goes down. You know, it almost feels like sometimes he's auditioning for the job. See, I can do Spurrier. I can do Spurrier.
Those SEC power rankings I do on Sundays, Travis, I might have called him Coach Rabbit Ears. In those,
he's SEC sensitive. He's sensitive, that one. You know, he had something for Josh Heupel at midfield last year. You know, this
a lot of
Spurrier.
Fun. Yeah. All right, Alabama heading into Mercer, Travis. We're not going to do a separate podcast previewing that one. So let's take a couple minutes before we sign off and discuss this upcoming game for Alabama home, of course. Mercer, an FCS school, dominant on the defensive side of the ball at the FCS level. Phenomenal year on defense for Mercer so far, Travis. They're number one in the whole FCS in like six or seven defensive categories against the run, third down conversion percentage, interceptions, turnovers, sacks. It's quite been quite a year.
Yeah, and the first year of a coaching change too. I mean, if you're Alabama, you like it because Mercer's gone away from the academy style offense, so you don't have to worry about your stars getting cut blocked this week as much, you know, like you did in previous years with Mercer. But it's been very impressive, and this is a team that obviously they like to show well this week. It's a check game. It's a bye game for Alabama where Mercer is concerned, but Mercer relative to what its goals are, bigger fish to fry the next week when they take on Furman and can wrap up a Southern Conference championship. So it's a 9-1 Mercer team. Now, not going to win this week, but hey, impressive stuff for sure.
Did you see the quote from Mike Jacobs about the helmet communications? The head coach for Mercer was asked for some reason about the communication from coaches straight to helmets that's debuted this year at the FBS level. And he said, well, we're not doing that. We can't afford that stuff. If we did that, we'd have to do it with soup cans and string, he said.
Well, maybe we'll – you know what? We haven't seen many of the old flashcards this year on the sidelines. Maybe we'll get a little retro cards over there for the signal in. Our guy Gelato checking in here. He makes a good point too. Before we get out of here, Chase, if UGA with one loss was better than Miami, what's the difference now? I can't really tell you, Gelato.
Yeah.
Quarterback play, I can tell you is better at Miami right now. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Georgia's reeling. I'm not going to be shy. You're right about Nico. That's huge. But man, Georgia seems to be the right time to catch Georgia with a big right hook, doesn't it, Travis?
Yeah, if the game was in Knoxville, yeah. I'd say it would definitely have more of that feel. But as we've seen, man, in this league, especially every week is so different in a lot of ways. And a lot of that has to do with road versus home, matchups, you know, I think in some ways, Georgia, even if Nico plays and is good to go, Georgia is going to be even more effective against Tennessee's offense than it was Ole Miss. Because Jackson Dart, you know, is a veteran guy, gutty guy, dynamic in some ways. He's not going to back up. I've seen some things from Nico, especially on the road, that make me worry about him a little bit in that environment. He hasn't set the woods on fire at Neyland, but that defense has afforded them the opportunity to stay in games long enough until they get something going. And, you know, Dylan Sampson's a hell of a running back against that Georgia defense. That'll be fun to watch too.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. Check us out next time on Ryer on YouTube for the Talking Tide podcast.